League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This week's episode of Side Guys is brought to you by our lovely patrons over at Patreon. So, shall we start this week with a review, perhaps?
A lovely wee review.
A lovely wee review. This one says, the perfect podcast, 5 stars. I look forward to this podcast every week. Knowing I'll have it to chill out after my long Sunday shifts at work is always helpful in coping with the moany customers. This podcast feels like hanging out with three intelligent, funny hosts while somehow combining education content into the mix. With a great mix of topics, I'm never bored, and have a very short attention span. 10 out of 10, definitely my favorite podcast.
That is so fantastic.
Thank you very much.
What a good review. Genuinely, though, three intelligent hosts?
Noah was on at one point, I think.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah,
yeah, okay, so like if you add, I don't know, between all of us, we average out to be at least three.
Yeah, so you're 1.5. James and I are half, and Noah's 0.25. Wait.
That doesn't add up.
No. Well, I just lost my credibility as an intelligent host.
You're down to zero.
Sorry.
Shall we start the show?
Yeah.
Stop the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, a show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jemp, and Luke Cutford. I'm not doing this again. Let's go. This week, we're talking about two poles that are slightly out of order.
Two poles?
Two poles.
Not two bowls?
Not bowls, poles.
Okay.
With a P.
Hmm.
Papa.
Papa.
Oh, Papa.
Papa. You guys know what we're talking about today?
Two poles that are slightly out of order.
Yeah, it's a bit of a
riddle. The north
and
south.
No.
Pole. No.
Bipolar disorder. Oh. Yeah. So the patrons this week have voted, they voted for bipolar disorder. So that is the episode we're going to be doing. Do you guys know anything about bipolar disorder before we get started?
So, yes, I do. Bipolar disorder is a disorder where your mood swings between sort of a depressed state and a manic state. Depressed being like extreme low, like a very, very low state, and mania being like mania as in not just happy, but just like you want to climb things or you want to spend loads of money or you want to do something risky.
Yeah, I mean, at its most basic level, that is exactly what bipolar is.
That's really rude. Thank you. If you're a basic bitch, then that's a definition.
What I mean is that's absolutely correct. But as with all biology, there are exceptions.
Sure. Okay.
So bipolar disorder, it's a chronic or episodic, which basically means it can happen occasionally or at irregular intervals. It's a mental disorder that's either chronic or episodic. So it basically means, like you said, mood swings, but it's a bit more than mood swings, really. Mm. You switch from one extreme depression to another, mania, as you've said, but they're more long term than mood swings. So these can happen over a period of sort of weeks or months, or apparently even years. These sort of swings between mania and depression.
Oh.
And that's the thing. It can last years. The disorder, you can have the disorder itself for years, but the mood swings can happen for weeks or months. So you can have a couple months of intense sort of mania, and then switch to a depressive state right after. So it's kind of it's a bit more than just sort of mood swings, really.
Mm.
So you can be initially diagnosed with depression, because if you're in a depressive episode, obviously. The doctor might think, okay, well, you're depressed. That makes sense. You've got depression. And then suddenly...
Especially if it's long-term.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
You've just gone through some depression.
Like. And then, a few weeks later, suddenly it seems like you're back on your feet.
Giddy.
Yeah, but you're not. It's a manic episode. So what are the kind of symptoms of bipolar disorder? Do you guys know that? Other than what we've already said, the mood swings.
There are other symptoms than that?
Well, kind of. So, I mean, the symptoms of the sort of depressive and manic states.
Well, so the manic states are like sometimes characterized by like extreme overconfidence and large spending habits. Mm-hmm. Or risky behavior.
Are you reading this directly from the NHS website?
I have gone through lots of psychiatrists in my life. I actually got diagnosed with the sort of, like, not quite as far as bipolar, but one step back, which is cyclothymia, which is...
That is a type of bipolar, yeah.
Well, you're welcome. So that's kind of like, I don't have the mania, but I have the lower and the fine. So
you've got like a hypomania, basically.
Yeah, essentially. So that's called cyclothymia.
Yeah.
So as for the depression, that state is sort of, I mean, I think probably most people know the basics of depression, but you can probably give us a clinical explanation for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, the depression, a lot of people think depression is just, oh, I'm quite sad for a while, but it's a lot more than that. It can affect your memory, you can feel restless or slowed down, you can have trouble sleeping, so that's either not being able to sleep or waking up too early or sleeping too much. Basically, if you've if you're depressed, chances are your sleep is just going to be wrecked in some way.
Yeah,
either end of the spectrum, either extreme. You have, like I said, you can have feelings of worthlessness. You can't make decisions very well. You find it difficult to concentrate. You can have trouble with eating. You can either sort of eat too much or not eat enough at all. Mm-hmm. It's not fun, depression.
No. I think it's an important distinction to make as well. The clinical explanation for depression being, I think, off my basic knowledge of it, it's sort of more like, so depressed, if you have like a depressant drug, that is like alcohol or probably morphine, something that basically depresses the central nervous system, makes everything slow down, makes everything activated less, rather than being like how we think of depression, the popular term being sad.
Yeah.
It's actually like a slowing down or a lack of ability of the central nervous system.
Yeah, I think so. I think the thing is, the thing with depression is that a lot of people say you shouldn't use the word depression or you shouldn't use the word depressed if you're not clinically depressed. I disagree with that. The word depressed can mean sad in some contexts. Yeah. Like, you know, oh no, my puppy flew away. I am now depressed because I have lost my puppy.
How did she do that?
I don't know.
It probably is true. If you have something bad happen to you, you probably maybe do have a temporary reduction in neurotransmitter release in your brain.
Yeah, and the thing is that, the thing about depression is, and this goes for anxiety as well, you can feel anxious without having anxiety. Mm. You can feel depressed without having depression. Yeah, the difference is that it's not just that feeling of sort of worthlessness or sadness or just that feeling of anxiety that comes along with both of those disorders. Depression comes along with a whole host of other things. Memory loss being one of them. These are one of the symptoms of depression that people don't really talk about. Mm. You can live in sort of a fog. I've already mentioned the sort of lack of sleep, the trouble with eating. All of these things can be affected by depression. So thinking of depression as just feeling quite sad isn't very accurate, but then also you can use the word depressed in the right context to just mean sort of sad.
So there's like a big range of, I guess, degree to which you can experience depression and anxiety and all these other different...
Yeah, well, I think the key is that depression, if you think of depression as more of depression disorder and anxiety more as anxiety disorder, in fact, anxiety is usually generalized anxiety disorder, that's taking a feeling that one can normally have, but it's so it's disordered.
Yes, yes.
It's prolonged. Chronic. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, these feelings are feelings that you can come across, but the point of depression and anxiety and all of these other sort of disorders is that they're chronic. They're prolonged. You can't really get out of them.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's depression. On to mania. It's a lot of things, really. You could feel very happy. You can have lots of energy, make big sort of plans, have lots of ideas. And you can feel really, really creative in this period. And you can spend loads of money that you normally wouldn't spend. You can think a lot, like have sort of your thoughts racing constantly. Mm. Eat a lot, drink a lot, have a lot of sex, and do a lot of things that sort of make you happy. I guess really, if you think of it, just the exact opposite of depression. All of the things that you, like, you see these in tables, you know, like sort of the symptoms for bipolar disorder are often listed in tables with manic in one column and mania in one column and depression in the other column. And if you go down the table, they're literally just opposites of each other. So,
right.
I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, yeah. So as I've said, you can do a lot of pleasurable things like eat, drink, have sex. You'd have the feeling you can do a lot of things at once without feeling tired. Feel like you're you can have an increased sort of sense of self-worth, so you can feel really important, talented or powerful. Again, the exact opposite of depression. So it's really like it's like a sort of whiplash there. You could talk quickly, feel like you don't even need to eat or sleep. So whereas with depression you feel like you can't eat or sleep, or you feel you want to sleep all the time, or the fact, or you feel like, you know, you eat to comfort yourself. In mania, you can feel like you don't need any of these things. Basically, you could feel like the biggest, most powerful person on the planet.
Yeah.
Which is the exact opposite of the worthlessness that you feel with depression.
And I'm assuming it's not everybody goes that far.
Yeah, no. So this, again, these are the sort of broadest strokes of the symptoms.
That's the other end of the spectrum.
So you can have, it's the same with depression. You can have any sort of collection of those symptoms. I mean, really, if you've got with depression, you know, you can have worthlessness, lack of ability to sleep, but your appetite could be fine and your memory could be fine. You know, those could be the symptoms that you've got of depression. With mania, you can have sort of a lot of energy and racing thoughts, but none of the other ones. It doesn't need to be every single symptom. Mm-hmm. You can have a collection of symptoms, and that, I mean, they can have different severities as well. Mm. So it's not a sort of checkbox. You've got to check everything off the list before you can say you've got bipolar disorder. As I've said, you can feel creative, but then also you can have symptoms of psychosis. So you can, you can be convinced that things are true when they're not, or see things that aren't there, which often leads to bipolar disorder being misdiagnosed as schizophrenia, because you've got because obviously in schizophrenia there's psychosis, and in severe cases, you can have psychosis, but then also suddenly become depressed after a few weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. There's a lot of symptoms for this, obviously, because it's two complete opposite extremes of the spectrum. So those are all the sort of symptoms, but there are also different types of bipolar disorder, which we already touched on. You've mentioned one, Luke. Cyclothymia. Yeah. Mm. So that's sort of fourth one that I talk about. If there's sort of three main ones, there's bipolar 1 disorder, bipolar 2 disorder, cyclothymic disorder, and then there's sort of a few other sort of less prevalent ones. So bipolar 1 disorder is effectively, it's defined by manic episodes that last at least a week, most of the day, nearly every day. Or when your symptoms of mania require you to be hospitalized.
Right.
Yeah. And then often you get separate depressive episodes, which last at least 2 weeks. And you can have sort of mixed symptoms. So you can have experience symptoms of mania and depression at the same time, which seems sort of contradictory. You know, I mean, but apparently that's something that can happen. Bipolar 2 disorder, that's a pattern of depressive episodes and hypomanic episodes. So that's not full-blown manic episodes. So hypo meaning sort of less or without. So hypomanic episodes basically mean sort of less manic than full-blown mania. Mm. So you still got the depression, and you kind of switch between the depression and the hypomania, but the manic episodes just aren't as intense as they are with bipolar 1 disorder. And cyclothymic disorder, also called, as you said, cyclothymia, it's defined by persistent hypomanic and depressive symptoms that aren't intense enough or don't last long enough to qualify as hypomanic or depressive episodes.
Yeah, so this is what I find so interesting about... This is not exactly what you said, but it's something I find really interesting about the way that mental health is categorized, is that mental health is often categorized with whether it is bad enough to affect your ability to function in society. Like, you could be having all of these issues go on inside you, but if your output is still helpful to society, conducive with the aims of society, conducive for your survival, it's like not... it's not a problem. So, like, we go around firstly, we go around, and every night, for example, we fall into a state of psychosis in the form of dreams. We believe things that aren't real. We see things that aren't there. and we experience them as true and we can't distinguish between those and reality. Mm-hmm. And then we wake up and we go to the shop and we use this magical invention called money. And we believe in all these sort of fictions that are helpful to our survival, right? Mm-hmm. And very often things go untreated if ultimately they are not severe enough to hamper your ability to continue to exist in society.
Yeah, I think the way that we look at mental health is not great. From personal experience, I was once told, oh, you've got mild depression and anxiety. And I was like, okay, cool. I can't really exist. I find it very difficult to do anything.
Yeah.
But I forced myself to do things.
Yeah.
So while I felt it was very intense, the doctor said, it seems fine because you're getting on.
Oh, but you can make yourself do it, right? So it can't be that bad.
Yeah, exactly. So the severity of mental health disorders can often be kind of, it can be affected by how well you manage to cope with them.
How well you present to other people.
So if you go to the doctor and you say, look, I am really struggling to, like, I'm barely keeping my head above water here. They'll be like, you haven't drowned yet, though. Therefore,
and that's
you're fine.
It's in part a resources issue. They don't have a lot of resources to deal with these problems and to help people, other than like to get put into a place where you're actually given help. Often you have to have like attempted something horrible or completely be unable to look after yourself. Mm. And the way I sort of describe it is, imagine your brain is sort of like a computational system. It takes an input and it takes an output. And the input is the senses and the output is your behavior. Mm. You have an input, which is the senses. If inside your brain, that input goes somewhere very worrying, somewhere paranoid, somewhere anxious, somewhere like, I don't know, what do people believe? Hillary Clinton's a lizard and they're putting things in the water to turn the frogs gay. Then before it outputs, like you have all these thoughts going on in your head, but before it outputs, it turns back into something that society would consider sane. Then you are considered dealing with it.
This is what we were talking about
even
before.
Even though the inside is torturous.
We were talking about this kind of thing before, and it's slightly related in that there are types of psychosis that are allowed.
Yeah.
And types of psychosis that aren't allowed.
Yeah.
For example, religion. Perfectly allowed.
You're perfectly
allowed to believe that there is a man who made everything, controls everything, and will punish you if you do anything wrong.
This is all logical.
That's perfectly
Corey.
Fine. So long as you call that man God, Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever you want to do, so long as you call that man that's fine. As soon as you say Steve is doing it and he's living in your shed,
or the flying spaghetti monster.
Exactly.
Yes.
As soon as you do something like that, that's it. You're crazy. But so long as everyone believes it, you're fine.
I know a guy who made a documentary for Channel 4 about his experience of going psychotic. And in it, one of his doctors in the institute in which he'd been sectioned wrote, actually in his file, he's got this file, and it said something like, I did wonder whether his belief in this thing was evidence for his schizophrenia or a religious belief. And it's like, what?
Yeah, but no, it makes
you can't tell
sense.
The difference. It's a bit,
but you've got to think, how many people are there that have sort of, say, mild psychosis that kind of maps quite directly onto religion, that just kind of gone unnoticed.
Well, the belief of a thought in your head, like a voice in your head telling you what to do.
And exactly. So people believe that these voices in their head, or that these impulses or compulsions are messages from God, or are devils, or things like that. How many people basically have those disorders go unnoticed because it maps so closely with religion?
There's a really fascinating theory I read about once where it was talking about how the possibility that religion came out of, you probably maybe know more about this, Corey, came out of mankind's trying to understand the emerging thought patterns as consciousness emerged. So as we became conscious of being conscious, which is potentially what separates us from animals in our evolutionary path, and they'll maybe get there at some point, is that we basically had, if you imagine a circuit, it looped back on itself and we started becoming conscious of our own consciousness and conscious of our thoughts, whereas thoughts were going to just be thoughts. Now we're conscious of thoughts, and then we have thoughts about our thoughts and thoughts about thoughts about thoughts.
And then it's turtles all the way down,
And turtles all the way down. And essentially, we then ascribed the thoughts about thoughts about thoughts this sort of etheric property of, oh, these thoughts are coming from something other than the internals of our own mind. And there's certain, I don't want to get into too much like psychiatry because I have not, I don't know every, like, I don't have enough.
Luke doesn't know everything about psychiatry.
I haven't done enough learning. Here first. I haven't done enough learning to guarantee that I'll get it right. But there's essentially like different parts of the brain that are responsible for different tasks and look after us in different ways. And if you go through certain amounts of trauma, those fracture into separate selves. The one that's coming to my mind is there's child self, parent self, and adult self. And if you have significant amounts of trauma, the child self becomes scared, the parent self becomes scorning, and the adult self is watching over all of those two, trying to sort of help them and fix them and love them, right? And we then ascribe that, possibly, in this idea that I'm sort of coming up with as I go, to God, is this adult self, this sort of benevolent, loving, trying to help you and fix you self, is the voice of the true God. And possibly the Old Testament God is this adult, scorning, horrible self.
Where did you read that?
So this was in some notes given to me by a psychiatrist or psychologist, I can't remember. But it was about basically coming to terms with trauma and about how you traumatic experiences causes you to fracture into these different selves. Mm. And you think that these are coming from outside of you, but actually even the self that is really horrible to you and is really scorning isn't coming from the fact that that's true. It's coming from the fact that it's hurt, it's damaged. Mm-hmm. It's
because I have heard about this, that kind of fracturing thing before. I don't know how reliable it is or how sort of true it is, but I have definitely heard of that that before.
It definitely came from a medical professional. Mm. I know that came from, I've got the PDF on my phone. It came from a medical professional.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Totally fair.
But it may be a thing that's used as an analogy to help rather than literally being true.
So I find often when people like to do this with sort of psychology and sort of psychiatry, where they decide, okay, Freud was sort of the master of saying, these are the specific parts of the self. And when something happens, this happens to everyone. And I find it kind of difficult to believe that everyone's brain does the exact same thing under when trauma is applied.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's probably, to be honest, it's probably a sort of an analogy or a metaphor or an easier way of describing things, or a thing that generally happens. But yeah. I just want to make it clear for the people listening. The takeaway from this is not that when there's trauma, you split into three selves.
No, absolutely. I just
want to make absolutely clear.
This is maybe, even if that were part of the picture, there's many other centers of the brain. These are analogies. These are arbitrarily placed markers of these patterns seem to sort of behave as an adult, and these patterns seem to sort of behave as a parent.
Whenever anyone's talking about psychology and they sound like they have the absolute answers for it, take it with a grain of salt. If anyone's saying this is absolutely what happens to people when this thing happens, take it with a grain of salt.
I'd say it's a good practice for life. If anyone ever says this is absolutely what happens anything, regardless of their practice, take it with a grain of salt.
Under standard temperature and pressure, water boils at 100 degrees centigrade.
I'm going to take that with a grain of salt, Corey.
Well, if you take it with a grain of salt, it will change the boiling temperature, Luke.
I set you up for that. I knew what you were doing. I'm so angry. All right. Shut up. Was very fast. Well done.
It all happened as I was saying it. It was unfolding in my so that was a bit of a sidetrack. Shall we get back to bipolar disorder?
Yeah.
So we've gone through the four types of bipolar disorder. You remember bipolar 1, bipolar 2, cyclothymia, and there's also the other sort of unspecified, the miscellaneous bipolar disorders. They don't really match any of those sort of three categories that we've got set up. But bear in mind that when it comes to mental health, there's no sort of set prescriptive rule for how everything works, and often with when you've got one mental health disorder, it tends to be comorbid with other ones. So if you've got bipolar disorder, it's likely that you'll have anxiety. Depression often comes with anxiety. In fact, most people I know that have anxiety are in some way depressed. or and vice versa.
Yes.
Those two are like best
mates.
That's
like the most common diagnosis in the NHS if you go is they'll give you generalized depression and anxiety disorder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're just so linked.
It's like, there you go. You've got them both. You know, that's it. You've got an ice cream. You've also got a cherry on top of that ice cream. Isn't it lovely? Except the cherry has anxiety and it's not very fun. It's not very fun.
That's not very tasty.
No.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the point here is...
Laugh through the pain.
My point here is that you need to bear in mind that these are kind of more guidelines rather than absolute strict rules, especially when it comes to symptoms and these different types. It's basically just we see generally these categories. It's like sort of categorizing anything when it comes to humans. We generally see these categories, so we've applied these names to them, but that doesn't mean that you definitely have either bipolar 1 or bipolar 2, and those are distinct things that happen in your brain.
Yeah.
It's just varying levels of intensity that you kind of say that sounds more like bipolar 2 or that sounds like bipolar 1.
Like a giant flow chart. Does the patient have this symptom? Yes. Does the patient have this symptom? Yes. If then it eventually gets to category 1, category 2, category 3, but they're not. They're all wavy and wobbly and all over the place.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
It's like a perfect fit, does it?
Exactly. So there's like, I mean, even with sort of bipolar 1, like I've said, you can have manic symptoms and depressive symptoms at the same time.
Which you'd think are the opposites.
Yeah, they are quite literally the opposites. But like, as I've said, when you like depression, feelings of worthlessness, mania, feelings of sort of self-importance, two completely contradictory things. Obviously, you wouldn't have those two symptoms at the same time necessarily. It would probably be the sort of worthlessness from depression and the boundless energy from mania. So
yeah,
that would probably be the mix. But yeah, it's very interesting. It's something that can really affect your life.
Well, that's really interesting, actually, because I was reading a book recently on a type of psychology called Adlerian psychology. I don't know the validity of Adlerian psychology, so don't quote me too much on that. But what it talks about in there is often the fact that things come with their opposites. So, for example, if you have a superiority complex, it's because inside you feel inferior, possibly. If you think you are superior, then you may be making up for the fact that you, another part of you, feel inferior.
Oh, yeah, I think that you often see that with sort of, it's a sort of defense mechanisms. In fact, there are a few people that I could talk about that are a member of a certain group that would then completely attack the member of the group that they're a part of. And often you see that that's because of their own insecurity sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So people will attack their own group because they're insecure about themselves, but present themselves as being incredibly confident.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I mean is that's a way of seeing that you could have, like, if I spoke to you on a normal everyday level, you might come across extremely self-important. And then if I spoke to you in a clinical setting, I would find out that you're extremely, you have a massive inferiority complex where you think you're really rubbish and you have those both opposite symptoms at the same time.
Yeah, so you present, so you sort of present yourself as being very confident when actually it's just to hide the fact that actually you don't really like yourself very much.
You've got some feelings down inside that you need to deal with.
Yeah, you're stabbing them deep down.
Yeah, really getting them down there.
So what are the causes of bipolar disorder?
Trauma?
Trauma?
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, that's sort of like a lot of stuff's caused by trauma. That's a pretty
this
good first guess.
Yeah, trauma does a lot, doesn't it? It does.
It can really screw you over in many ways.
It's a bit of a trick question.
We don't know.
We
never know.
We don't. Well, look, this is the thing.
Do we know anything?
Well, we know
Do
something.
We actually know anything?
We know something. I said to someone the other day that in the course of researching for this podcast, I've realized we know very little.
Very little.
You know, you think that we know a lot about things. You're like, oh yeah, we know how to treat bipolar disorder. We know how to treat depression. We don't know how it works.
We don't even know how.
We just know that it works.
But at least we know nothing. That's a good step.
Before we thought we knew everything.
Now.
Yeah, I mean, when we were saying that it was demons and possessions, we were like, oh yeah, so all you need to do is throw holy water on them, beat them, and chuck them in a home. And that'll solve it right there and then. And then we decided to electrocute them, well, not electrocute them, to shock them out of it. And we're like, yes, that's it. That's how to get rid of all this. And now we're like, look, okay, giving the people lithium works, I guess. I don't know how it works, but it just does. Let's try and figure out why.
Okay.
Yeah.
It works.
You're right. I guess... Knowing is half the battle.
That's a pretty big part of the battle. Admitting you don't know stuff is a massive step.
The thing is, I think something that's really important that people don't recognize something really important in science, is that you need to be able to say, I don't know. Mm. And a lot of the things that we've, spoken about in this podcast, the big problems that we've had, for example, the vaccines and whatnot, have been people being unwilling to say, I don't know. I just don't know this. If you have people...
What if they're the one that knows, Corey?
Yeah, but they're not.
No.
If you ever think that you are the one person that has the answers, I can tell you almost invariably, you are not.
No. God damn it. I was so sure.
You were so sure. You're dead sure. Like, if you think you're the one person that's cracked it,
yeah,
look at it again. But no, I think saying that you're having the ability to put your hands up and say, hey, I was wrong about this. I've learned and I'm going to do better. That's the best thing you can do.
We'll look back on that. I mean, we already do, but we'll look back on that in hundreds or thousands of years, if we're still around, as one of the most important moments in human history. Well, because before that, it was just loads of competing ideas all claiming to know the truth and then having wars over it.
Yeah.
And that's just... That was like life for hundreds and hundreds of years.
I think that's the wonderful thing about science. I think that's where science and religion kind of often differ, whereas where religion often says it holds all of the answers to all of your questions, and that's a way to draw people in. In fact, I think I've genuinely been on the street and had people sort of try and get me into the religion by saying, all the questions that you've got, we've got the answers here. And I just can't believe that. Come on, you can't have all the answers. Yeah, you can't have all the answers. What happened on Lost? You don't have the answers to that because no one knows what happened on Lost because it was a silly show. No, but do you know what I mean? Science sits there and says, look, I don't know everything, but we're trying to figure it out. And it's the best guess we've got right now. Whereas oftentimes with some sort of, with other sort of ways of explaining the universe, they claim to have all of the answers, which is never true, really.
It's a big claim.
It's a big claim to make. And that's the thing about this podcast as well. I feel like we often admit when we've got something wrong because we don't always get everything right.
Oh, absolutely. We do corrections all the time.
People email in. If you check the comments, we're quite active in the comments. If someone points at something that we may have not gotten right, we always like to respond to that and thank them for doing that. If you check out our live shows, often we'll talk about corrections then if they're big enough. But yeah, I think that's the thing. A lot of the I saw this on QI the other day from a really old episode. Quite a lot of the facts that you have at any one moment will be disproven within a year or 10 years. it sounds crazy, but facts can be completely disproven. For at one point it was an absolute fact that the smallest thing was an atom, and there was nothing smaller than an atom.
That's why it's called an atom.
And then exactly, and then we discovered, oh no, there are things smaller than atoms, but there's nothing smaller than that, but then there is. it's one of those things. If you think something is
fat, that's the smallest thing. There's absolutely nothing smaller than that.
Look, I am pretty sure,
like, we have reached the end. Surely
we've gotten to the smallest thing. I'm obviously pretty sure there can't be anything smaller.
We definitely won't be proven wrong in 5 to 10 years.
No, exactly. We don't. If you ever take something as absolute fact, you need to be ready for that fact to change if there's new evidence or if you misunderstood the evidence that you already have. And I think that's something that we really strive to do on the show. So if you do have any corrections for this show, please feel free to send them into us at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
But now it's time to talk about some of the causes that we've got ideas about for bipolar disorder. So, as I said, we don't know the exact cause, but we do know that genes must come into play in some sense. So don't wear Levi jeans, otherwise you're higher risk. No, I'm joking. Your genetics are all these I can't resist.
I have some Levi jeans. I was about to say that, but then I was like, but I also have cyclophonia, so damn it. Damn you.
The theory has been proven so far.
You have one data point, and it is affirmative of your theory.
That's it. No further study needed.
No further study. Exactly. Oh my! That does remind me of a story that from the other day. I was talking to let's call them what they are. I was talking to a TERF the other day.
Oh,
she brought up this study about that basically said that all lesbian trans women are perverts. And I said, Okay, that's a very big claim. So let's
that's
look.
That's quite a big claim, actually.
That's
yeah.
a large claim. So let's look at the study that that you're talking about here. So it was a series of studies from one man that had a very small sample size, under 100, and it was based on a questionnaire, and from the results of that questionnaire, he concluded that trans lesbians are perverts, effectively.
So he polled a bunch of trans lesbians and asked them if they're perverts, and they all said yes.
That's not the probably would have been like that's leading not the simplest questions. Way. Yeah. That's not the simplest way to. That's not. I'm simplifying here.
Okay.
But effectively, it was about sort of sexual desire and whether that in sort of influenced decision to transition and things along that line. But ultimately, the conclusion that they were drawing from that was that trans women who are lesbians are perverts. And I said,
by virtue of the fact that they are trans and lesbian.
Yes. And yeah. I said, okay, for one thing, you're transphobic, so get that out of the way. But for another thing, that's a very big claim to make from a very small series of studies. And she said, well, there haven't been any studies disproving it. And I said,
What?
No, exactly. And I was saying that, I was like, she was like, and it's been like 20, 30 years and there haven't been any studies disproving it. I said, yes, but it's been highly contested. She said, no peer-reviewed studies disproving that study. That's not how it works. So if you got to be wary for people that that's what we're talking about there. You've got to be wary for people that take sort of small sample sizes, produce a study, and come to a conclusion, and then there's no further study on that area.
She is aware that that's the dubious basis upon which the religion devoted to the flying spaghetti monster is founded.
Yes.
That's kind of the point of that religion, is you can't prove that there isn't a flying spaghetti monster in the sky.
Yeah.
So we will worship it.
Yeah, but they proved at once that a certain group of people are perverts. So
right.
you don't need to look into it anymore. You poll a few people, you make the claim, and then it's done.
I wonder what the questions were. Was it just like sexually attracted to people?
I think it was about sexual interest and right. And how gender and sexuality were sort of intertwined in some way, but right. it was very funny to watch this person right. try and argue that because there weren't any peer-reviewed studies directly disproving it, that we had to take it as this one small series of studies with a small sample size as fact.
This is the best evidence we've got.
Exactly. I mean, that's just not the case. So again, this is just a small aside to remind you to be wary of people that pull out studies and say there's not been anything disproving it. Just because something hasn't been disproven by any further studies, that doesn't make it true. If it hasn't been proven by any further studies either, then it's basically just a single data point sitting out there in the ether. You can't draw too many conclusions from it. If you're going to do that, then you can conclude that in fact Levi jeans do cause bipolar disorder.
Because well,
they
do, apparently. Any studies disproving
yes.
that Levi jeans well, cause bipolar
this
disorder.
This is my study. Luke, you Hello. Have a pair of Levi jeans, do
I,
you not?
I do.
Okay. And do you have some form of bipolar disorder, or have you?
I have a diagnosis for cyclothymia.
Okay, good. Please, peer, review this study.
Mm.
Hi.
Is it good? It's a good study?
Yes, it's a good study.
Good study. Peer-reviewed study, there we go. Levi jeans cause...
Take that, Terps.
No, but yeah, before anyone says anything, I know that peer-reviewed studies are they're anonymized. I know that's not how they work. You don't need to correct us on that. It was a little joke. Okay, we can all have a little joke every now and then, can't we?
No, never.
No jokes allowed.
No jokes
from Corey. James and I will bring the jokes.
I'll tell you this though. I have found a lot of people that comment on the show being like, these guys are making mature jokes. They're making jokes about this. I want to learn science. Guys, if you're here to learn science and not hear any jokes, I'm sorry, but you've got the wrong podcast.
To be fair, we should call it the Sci and Jokes Guys.
Well, it's a comedy science podcast. I think that's...
Sci and Jokes Guys.
But Corey, that's not clear from the name.
That's true.
And I'm personally offended by that. I want to learn and not have fun.
Can we just release a cut of an episode that's about 10 minutes long that just has all the information in it?
Really, really deadpan. Which is like, wow, that is interesting.
No, I just mean a normal episode that we've cut just to take cut. Out all of the
oh,
jokes.
Oh, yeah. One we've already done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone wants to try and do that, be my guest. But
Someone make an alternative channel. Psy-Guy's alt.
Psy-Guy's no jokes.
Psy-Guy's but yeah, there's no jokes.
Psy-Guy's no jokes. Oh, please. Someone edit that and run it. We'll give you the copyright. We don't care.
Oh my God, yeah, go ahead.
Psy-Guy's jokes sold separately. Fun.
Imagine that got more popular than the actual.
I'm so mad.
And then we do another channel where it's just the jokes without any of the scientific
context.
Setup.
No science. No context. Context. Just
Psy Guys, no lines. Facts.
Fantastic.
Corey wouldn't be in any of the episodes. It'd just be me and Luke.
I make jokes every now and then. I had a good one. I don't remember, but I definitely made a joke at one point in my life.
You'd pop in every once in a while and people would be like, who's this guy?
Yeah,
who's
that? He's just there for representation, man. So genes can have an influence on bipolar disorder, can't they?
Yes.
Yes, they can.
Well, especially if they're Levi's.
Although there haven't been any peer-reviewed studies.
Genetics can have an influence on on bipolar disorder.
Is it like the genetics can have influence your susceptibility to it?
Well, it's sort of... there's a sort of hereditary aspect to it. Mm. So it can be... It can be more common in families, if that makes sense. So that kind of points to the idea that there is a genetic component to bipolar disorder, and that's it could be a genetic predisposition that makes you, as you said, that makes one more susceptible or that increases one's risk of developing bipolar disorder. That's not to say that there is a gene in you that if you've got that gene, you've got bipolar disorder. That's not at all what we're saying. And to be honest, if that was the case, I feel like we'd have figured it out by now.
It's like one of those things where if you look at side effects of drugs, for example, sometimes it will say that like drugs can activate previously unactivated mental health conditions. Well,
that's the case for marijuana and schizophrenia.
Yeah.
So you can. Yeah, you can have a. You can if you have any sort of particularly psychoactive drug, it can potentially trigger. Schizophrenia or other disorders. Mm. It can. I mean, if you've got a sort of predisposition towards psychosis or you're at risk for developing psychosis, it can trigger it. And when I say trigger, I don't mean if you were. It basically makes it happen earlier than it would have. So it's not a case of anyone, say smoking weed, can develop psychosis. It's just those that are predisposed toward developing psychosis have a higher chance of developing it earlier. If they, partake in recreational marijuana use.
You're only increasing your risk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there is some genetic factor to it. So identical twin studies have found that even if one twin develops bipolar disorder, the other twin might not. But if you've got a parent or a sibling with bipolar disorder, you are more likely to develop bipolar disorder. That's not to say that if you've got a family history of it, that you are definitely going to develop it.
Yeah, it's like, I think this is a really important point to point out as well and to shine light on is like, say, for example, something says like, if you have this many eggs, you double your risk of heart disease. And that sounds really scary, but also that's doubling from a population size where say 1 in 100 people will develop heart disease or 10 in 100 people, it goes from, you're 20% rather than 10%. It doesn't make you much, 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 much more likely to develop a specific condition. It just means you're twice as likely to get a thing that you were already fairly unlikely to get from a statistics point of view.
Yeah, so I mean, in this sense, most people that have a family history of bipolar disorder won't develop bipolar disorder.
Right.
So it does increase, you do see more people with a family history of it. Ending up with developing bipolar disorder, but that's not to say that if you've got a family history of bipolar disorder, you are more likely than not going
highly
to develop
likely,
it.
Yes.
He's highly likely. It's such a we had a comment about this, the way that genetics influence probability and sort of genetic disposition towards developing things. Just because you have an increased chance genetically does not mean that you will definitely have it.
Brains are incredibly bad at thinking about statistics, though. We hear something's more likely and instantly we're like, I'm going to get that now.
Yeah.
You know?
Basically, what you can take away from this is that there is some genetic component to bipolar disorder in the fact that you can have a higher risk if you've got a family history of it. That's basically all you need to take away from it. We don't have a specific gene that we found that is the sort of source of the disorder, but we do know that there is some sort of genetic component there. And so the other sort of cause for bipolar disorder is sort of brain structure and function, and neurotransmitters and all of that stuff, brain chemistry, basically. Mm-hmm. So we find that the brain structure and function of people with bipolar disorder might be slightly different from that of people who don't have bipolar disorder or other psychiatric disorders. So, I mean, you find that with a few different sort of mental health disorders, that you can have difference in brain structure and function. In fact, it makes sense that you'd have a difference in brain function when the problem is that your brain isn't functioning as a brain normally would.
Yes.
So this is the thing. We don't really know exactly how it works. We don't know exactly what causes bipolar disorder. It could be something to do with a chemical imbalance, which generally means neurotransmitters not operating in the way that they normally would. Do you guys know what neurotransmitters are?
Yes.
Yes.
Would you like to explain what a neurotransmitter is?
Luke, would you like to explain what a neurotransmitter is?
It is a small chemical that is released from one part of the brain to another part of the brain to activate a certain chemical pathway. Is that kind of
right? I thought they carried them.
So
it's like a messenger.
Yeah. So your brain is made up of neurons. You know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your neurons pass chemical messages at the synapse, which is a tiny gap between those cells, in a process called neurotransmission. And the chemical messages that are sent across are sent using molecules called neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
So the neurotransmitters send the messages across the synapses, basically.
So, for example, if I wanted to tell Corey one of three things, and if it was the first thing, I pass him a red ball. If it's the second thing, I pass him a yellow ball. If it's the third thing, I pass him a blue ball. The ball is a neurotransmitter,
yep.
And the color determines which neurotransmitter it is.
Yeah, that's right. The most simplest way of looking at it. Obviously,
thank you again.
I'm saying the description that I'm giving is very, very basic because, again, this is brain chemistry, and unless we're doing a full episode on brain chemistry, I'm not gonna
quite
get
complex.
To yeah, I'm not gonna get too in depth it because it is very complex. But there are sort of we've kind of split them into two basic groups. Those two groups are small molecule transmitters and neuropeptides. So small molecule transmitters are like dopamine. Those usually act on cells that are directly next to the other cells. And neuropeptides are small molecules like oxytocin. Those can modulate or adjust how cells communicate at the synapse.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Sure.
Basically, we found over 60 different types of neurotransmitter so far. And they're very important for our brains working effectively. I don't want to get into exactly how they work.
I assume so.
Because it's very complicated. And to be honest, I need to do a lot more reading before I'm very comfortable saying this is exactly how it works. Yeah. But
A lot more reading. There's a lot that goes into brains.
Yeah. So the fact is that basically, think of it this way. Neurotransmitters are the chemical messengers in the brain. They are what sort of send and modulate the messages that your synapses or your brain cells send. What your neurons, your brain cells send between each other.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So an imbalance or a lack of sort of, I guess, sensitivity to these neurotransmitters could be a cause for bipolar disorder. But again, we just don't know. There are some studies looking into it, and there are some avenues that we're going down. But as of yet, in my research, I've not found a definitive answer for what causes it. And this is the thing. Again, this is like the sort of the thing we spoke about in the gay episode, or the gay gene episode, where bipolar disorder is very, very varied, and it may not be one distinct cause, one distinct cause that results in that sort of those symptoms, you know? And this because, you know, the same with depression, there may not be one distinct cause for depression. But in terms of sort of lifestyle causes, you can trigger bipolar disorder if you've got, say, money troubles, or you're going through a divorce, or any sort of stressful period in your life. As with most mental health disorders, you can develop them if you're in a particularly stressful period.
Mm.
But as of yet, we don't know the actual physical reason behind bipolar disorder sort of developing, really.
Mm.
Yeah. But we do know how to treat
Mysterious.
It. We do know how to treat it.
That's good.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I say kind of. We've got mood stabilizers. One of the main ones is lithium. We've been using that for a long, long time. That's kind of the standard one. So you get lithium is literally, it's lithium, the metal, the alkali metal, the lightest metal. You get it in the form of lithium citrate or lithium carbonate.
It's the drug that the character Crazy Eyes in Orange is the New Black is given.
Oh.
If you remember that, I'm pretty sure that's true.
I actually do remember good. That, weirdly. Yeah. I haven't watched that show in years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It can do a lot of things. So around the synapse, it modulates neurotransmitter reception. It can modify the production of neurotransmitters. It can even change the levels of electrolyte concentrations as well. So it can have an effect on a lot of different things. We don't know exactly which effect is good for bipolar disorder, and we don't know exactly how lithium helps. But we do know that it works.
Generally. We do know that it works, okay. Yeah,
there are side effects, obviously, as with any drug. But we know that it works well enough.
Positive. Yeah. Something to take away.
Yeah. So there is a treatment, but... Along with talking therapy and your standard other sort of therapies that go with mental health disorders. But in terms of drugs, that's the most common one. And I think that's a very good place to end the episode. We've gone through all of bipolar disorder. I may have said BPD at some point. It's not BPD, it's BD. BPD is
kind of the same letters, bipolar disorder.
Yeah, bipolar disorder and borderline personality disorder.
Yeah,
BPD and
yeah.
BD.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, when you're running through it, you just spell out the words wrong. But no, that is bipolar disorder. That's sort of the causes for it. We don't know the treatments for it. We don't know how they work, and the symptoms for it. We've got those pretty well characterized. So we're good on that. But that is the episode for this week. I guess it's time to thank our patrons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So as this is the Patreon vote episode, every single month we will read out all of the new patrons, but also we'll have all of our patrons just in a little credits roll.
Hello there, patrons.
If you want to,
be down the bottom or something right now.
Yeah, if you want to be read out sort of next month, make sure you go ahead and join up on Patreon before the 1st of whatever September. That's it, the 1st of September.
Go. So join patreon.com/SciGuys. Exactly. Go sign up.
Join up there before the 1st of September and you will be in with the chance, and I say the chance, it's 100% chance of having your name read out in next month's Patreon vote. And not only that, you get to vote on a bunch of things, you get to choose episodes, you get a lot of different things, cool bonus stuff. But anyway, thank you, Samuel Downing.
Thank you to Eloise van der Walt.
Thank you name right. to Kalia Zakaya.
Thank you to Hannah Lafives.
I think that's Eliza.
Yeah, there is a number
in there.
No, it's
Elifive.
There's Elifive in it.
Oh, okay. Thank you to Mark Davison.
Thank you to Mads Bamford.
Thank you to Bethany Carter.
Thank you to Melissa Sanders.
Thank you to Taylor Morgan.
Thank you, Amy Elizabeth.
Thank you to Bailey Ray.
And finally, thank you, Maud.
Thanks, Maud.
Thanks, Maud.
Thanks, Maud.
Great. Well, that is this week's episode. As I've said, you can head over to patreon.com/SciGuys if you want to be in with the chance. I keep on saying chance. It's 100%
chance.
The chance. The 100% chance of getting read out.
Of getting read out and also getting a load of other benefits. You've got bonus episodes every month. You get to see every single live show whenever you want. You get little bits of bonus content. You sometimes get content early. You also get to vote in Patreon votes for episodes. You also get to submit episodes for the vote. And it's a really fun time. You also get to join our Patreon Discord, which is actually quite active and a bit fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, great conversations over there. So if you like the sound of that, head over to patreon.com/SciGuys. But that is the show. Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey Everywhere.
I am Jamkin Everywhere.
I am Luke Cutforth Everywhere.
Goodbye.
Polar disorder.
Good.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.